Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's February 15th, 2013. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, where's my chocolates?
No, you don't get your chocolates. But I did buy you a poker cruise.
You bought me a poker cruise today?
Get this awesome email yesterday. Someone said, Cupid wants me to buy you a poker cruise, and that's what I did. I even bought one for Jeannie, too. Unfortunately, I just got to share a cabin, so she's probably not very happy.
I'm sure she is, though. She'll do anything for a cruise, practically, for me, so.
No, chocolates make you fat, man.
Yeah, make me fat. I'm already am fat.
Well, fatter, yes, I'm sorry. You know, they really should. If they actually loved you, they should give you, like, celery sticks.
That's right.
No blue cheese. You know, just straight roughage.
That's right. Celery sticks and non-pulp orange juice. So, you know, we did just get back from the cruise.
Uh-huh.
And I have to say that this was one of the best cruises we've had from a, you know, production and just the crowd and stuff. I mean, everybody was so friendly. There were, like, no complaints, no problems. Everything got through customs, no problems. Picked up the truck, delivered everything. It was just a really, really good cruise for us, I thought.
It was, yeah. I really enjoyed it, and you're right. I mean, after 10 cruises, I think we might possibly have this thing down.
Close.
Now, of course, the next ship's going to sink, probably, but...
Yeah.
Because we got all cocky here right now, but...
But it was fun, and, you know, Faso was there three times, three different occasions, Faso said to me, you know, great time, Chris, thanks, man, appreciate it. And I was like, wow, it's hard to get a compliment out of Faso, so when he gives you one, you remember it, and when he does it three times, holy cow, that's a red-letter day.
Red-letter day.
One of the things that, bothers me about cruising, though, for me, is that I like to fall asleep with the TV on.
Mm-hmm, I know. That's why we don't travel together anymore.
And it's tough to fall asleep to the TV on a cruise ship because I can never get the time. There's no timer on my TV to turn it off. I mean, I want the TV on, but I don't want it on until I wake up in the morning. I want it to shut off while I'm sleeping. So, you know, one night I'm trying to sleep. It's like 4 a.m. because I don't get out of the room till almost 3 every night. And I can hear them talking on the TV. And I look up, and it was like a scene from a TV show where they were playing poker. Mm. And I thought, holy cow, I can't get away from it. No matter what I do, TV poker finds me. I'm on a cruise ship. And I thought, oh my God, there's no way that this is going to find me, but it does. So I started thinking about it, and I said, you know how the WPT intro used to say, Vince Van Patten hosts a Hollywood home game. And then there used to be a TV show, a poker show called Hollywood Home Game. I think it was with Phil Locke. Do you remember that? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I decided that I would like to host a Hollywood home game.
Okay.
But it's not what may come to mind when you say that. I've decided it would be a lot of fun, maybe, if everything you see in Hollywood poker scenes will be okay in my Hollywood home game.
I like where you're going with this.
So, I think that we have to try to stick to these rules and see how long it'll take for Faso to throw a card to hit me in the forehead. But the first one would be, you know, you want to see a person's bet and raise another amount? Go right ahead!
Absolutely.
You can also say, I call and raise. That works, right?
Why not? Absolutely.
If somebody bets, say, $10, feel free to raise only $1. Right? That's fine. I'll make make it 10 plus 1. Well, I'll make it 10 plus 2. We could be there all day. Isn't that what poker's all about? You know, and then, you know, when someone doesn't have money to cover your bet, they have to fold.
They have to fold, yeah.
They have to fold. Sorry, you don't have enough money. You know, bring Bill Gates to the table, and I'm sure he'll be on the show later. But you know what? They don't have to fold if they have a gold watch or a gold ring, right? They can throw it in the middle. Silly audience.
Take the nuts off of the stagecoach to do it, right?
That's right. Silly audience. Table stakes are for kids. IOUs? Sure, they're acceptable currency. Throw it in the middle. The other thing is we always have to play five-card draw.
Of course.
Right. Yep. It has to be five-card draw. But if someone calls Hold'em, we're allowed to bet and then pull the bet back if we regret how much we bet. Have you seen that commercial yet where the guy starts pushing it all in, then he hears the horn and pulls the money back? So, hey, you know what? You really bet about that's okay. This is the Hollywood home game. Of course, all of our winning hands have to be at least quads.
Of course, yes.
And then when you do win with those quads, you have to slow roll.
Sure.
Right? I mean, this all makes sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, if you have a tell, it has to be blatant.
Right.
Like eating Oreo cookies or whistling louder when you're bluffing.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, of course, if you lose a lot of money, you can always take your fellow Hollywood home gamers to court and sue them for your losses. But really, I mean, I just wonder, there's so many things that we've all matured past, because I'm sure that we all thought those things were pretty normal.
Oh, of course. We learned everything about Hollywood.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you always believe what you see.
Hollywood is the public school system of America.
You know, that is so true and so sad. But it's true. I mean, half of these things that I brought up, at least, we all thought, oh, what's wrong with that? Before we actually learned how to play the damn game. But it was something like that on TV. One of those things happened on TV. I was going to have you try to name all these, where these things happened in Hollywood, but that would take it too long, so.
And there'd probably be multiple right answers for all of them.
That's true. You're absolutely right. But it sounds like fun, doesn't it? I want to see how pissed off we can get people, you know, saying, I raised, but only a dollar.
Well, I'm only going to come to this game if men are forced to wager a night with their fiancé. When they have quads. And I have set the deck to get a straight flush. That would be a much more exciting game for me.
And then you could pay with your kidney if you lose.
Of course.
I think that was in Shade, that movie Shade.
Yeah, I would actually probably prefer a liver. I'm sure I'm going to need that before a kidney. But
well, you can
any available body.
You lose the liver, you're done. You lose one kidney, you're all right.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I don't want to. My liver's going to go first, so I want to have one on standby.
Oh, you want to get paid with it? I thought you wanted to pay.
Yeah, I want to have
it.
a couple livers in the ice box just in case. You know,
who's going to be the guy that says, "All right, I'll pay you with my liver"? Oh man, that might happen in Hollywood though.
Yeah, if your time clock is down on the way, you know.
I have 8 minutes to live.
Excellent. Very good. Very good.
Well, I think we should do it. I think we should. Next time, if I ever host a home game, that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, you're talking about Faso flipping a card at you. The person that's going to flip out most if we would introduce this is named Chris Cosenza. No one likes a slow-moving home game worse than Chris Cosenza.
Come on, wouldn't it be fun to watch me tear my
house apart? Come on,
Chumble!
Don't get the other cards!
Come on.
Hey, can we quit talking? We're watching the TV, deal the cards!
Wouldn't you just get a kick out of me destroying my own home?
Yes,
come
I would.
Come
on. Oh, wow. Well, you know, one of the great things about this cruise is, you know, our guest last week, Drew Cohen, absolutely had a blast with him and his dad. It's always good when you have podcast listeners that aren't just happy to be on the cruise, but uber happy to be on the cruise.
Yeah.
And when we got done with the show, and he's like, you know what, hey, I keep meaning to tell you guys, I have an idea for a show. And he's like, you know what, I think maybe there's so many of these new terms that are prevalent in poker now. And I don't know if your audience always understands it. And then, of course, he was talking about how his dad was a little bit lost in Jonathan's class. And a couple of examples I remember, maybe you have some other ones, but, you know, flat, jam, things like that that aren't readily definable, that don't seem to make sense. And he actually had another theory, too, where he said there wasn't The words weren't consistent with our meetings too. I can't remember that was yet, but I'm like, you know what? That's a very good idea. We always forget about that. We sometimes fall in these traps of jargon and cliches.
Oh, you know what it was? Like the stuff where he said, "There's no opposite to betting thin."
Yeah,
you don't say, "I bet fat," you know, or whatever. So it's good to explain it to terms, and not only that, but there is no opposite for some of them or whatever.
Exactly. So here's what we're going to do. If we get enough solicitation here, we will dedicate an entire show to nouveau modern poker terminology.
The entertainment value alone for us trying to even figure out what the terms mean will be worth the show. So send in as many of them as you can. Send in any of the terms that you, even if you don't think we know what they are, we'll have fun trying to figure out what they are. And if we don't know, we'll admit we don't know. But, you know.
Make something up.
We'll make something up.
But go ahead and email us those terms that you think players might need a little help understanding to podcast@antiupmagazine.com or call the hotline at 813-448-1120 or post them in our forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, and maybe even we'll get something going on Facebook and Twitter too. Anyway, you can get a hold of us.
Yeah, you know, and it might be fun to try to come up with how we think that term was invented, or why it's called that. You know what I mean? Not just the fact that jam means to put all your money in the middle, but why it's called that. Like, yes. You know, shove, jam. So, I mean, you can figure it out. So, maybe we'll have some fun with that, too. So, it could be kind of a funny show. So, you know, help us out here. Give us...
Isn't that like entomology?
Yes.
Cosmetology or some kind of some kind of ology.
I think it's entomology.
There's no way I get that right off the bat, so it's got to be something.
That was pretty good, though. All right, well, you're going to have to help me with the hotline this week. It's 813-448-1120. You call it, we use it, we give. Our good friend Tom Pizza Turley called in, and I think Scott's going to have to answer the question. So let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, Scott, Chris, this is Tom. Just Tom Turley was calling about the Chinese poker, Open Face. I've been hearing down at PCA that they had a tournament for Open Face Chinese. Also, it sounds like a lot of pros on the circuit, and everywhere you turn around, they're always talking about Open Face Chinese poker and how it's taken over. We actually started playing in our home game. If we were playing a little tournament, sometimes a couple folks go out and we'll play a two-handed, three-handed, sometimes four-handed Open Face. Just want to get your thoughts on it, and if it's something you guys play. And also, there's a couple apps out there that you can play Open Face. I know that you guys did a show about a year ago about Chinese poker, but it's a little different mix where you get five cards, and then you set your three hands, basically your front, back, and middle, and then each person then takes turns dealing a single card, and then you can get points on royalties, and it's actually pretty cool.
No, I think I talked about this on a couple of shows ago. I absolutely am in love with Open Face Chinese poker.
And I can't believe I didn't play it on the ship. We were that busy. We were that busy that I, you know, playing that I didn't really have to.
We did have a couple unofficial games going. But first of all, funny story. We were asking Jonathan Little, our pro, about it and what he thought. And he's like, you know what? It's a fad. Chinese poker was a fad. People got all excited about it. And now there's a new fad, and people are going to be excited about this, and eventually there's going to be a new fad. And he was like, you know what, hey, the real sharp players are cleaning up on the non-sharp players now, and eventually it's going to dry up. But, you know, he just came back from the PCA down in the Bahamas, and he was saying that, you know, towards the end of the trip, there were 20 tables of open-faced Chinese poker going and, like, one no-limit game going. That's just how prevalent it is now with the pros, I think obviously people that listen to our show know what Chinese poker is. It's exactly the same thing. You've got to build 2 5-card hands and 1 3-card hand. The bottom 5-card hand has to be better than the middle 5-card hand, which has to be better than the 3-card hand. But instead of being dealt all of your cards at once and organizing them like in true Chinese poker, you get a certain number of cards to start with, and you have to position them, not knowing what your rest of your cards are going to be. And then you get one card. Everybody goes around and gets one card at a time, and it essentially is piecing together a puzzle. And where it gets difficult then is, you know, you fouling your hand.
Yeah.
You know, if you put four clubs on the bottom and you don't get that fifth glove, boom, your hand's fouled. You don't get nothing.
Yeah.
And then it gets really sick, from what I understand, with the pros with royalties. I mean, you can imagine how hard it is not to foul your hand. And, of course, the safer way to go is to be very conservative, not foul your hand. So, of course, that's not fun. So, you know, I had to put all these royalties in where, you know, if you get flushes or straights or things like that, then you essentially got to give your other opponent your fiancé for a night. And that's what makes it really exciting now, I think. But yeah, I think it's definitely a fun game. You know, I'm going to have to agree with Jonathan. I mean, Chinese, I don't know if Chinese the fad has ended. I mean, I still know a lot of people that play Chinese, and it's very... And a good, it is a game, like as Turley said, that once, if you're playing a tournament in a home game, we used to have this problem, right? You know, after the first person gets knocked out, okay, all-time dealer. Yeah, that's easy. Second person gets knocked out, okay, all-time watching the dealer. You know, what does that person do?
And chip runner.
Yes, exactly. So it's nice. It's a game that can be played with two, three, or four people. And, you know, when I first talked about it on the show, I think I said, my wife loves it. And that's great. You know, it's a game... and that's probably another advantage of it. It's a game to get some of these people in, you know, if it's wife, husband, boyfriend, girlfriend, whoever, that isn't really into poker. It's a good introduction game because it's not as much about poker as Hold'em or Omaha or something. It's a puzzle, you know, and my wife picked it up right away, and she doesn't like playing poker, but she's like, all right, well, I mean, I know the hand rank, so I just got to figure out where stuff goes. And, you know, it kept us interested. An entire train ride home from Baltimore. So,
yeah. I don't think I'm gonna like open face Chinese poker. I still haven't played one hand of it yet. But I just so you're dealt what, five cards first, and then
yeah, I want to say it might be more than that, but okay. But yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I'm gonna say that at least when you play Chinese normally, it was just there was some skill involved. Now in this, it's not skill. It's skill. I mean, it's not really skill anymore. I mean, I understand if people don't email me. I don't care. I mean, I know that there's a skill, but really, you know, you're still completely on the come the entire time, and it's just adding more, you know, more crap to this game.
I'll disagree with you on that. Here's where the skill comes involved in this game. One is understanding the probabilities of making certain hands. So when you have your initial cards, where you put them, obviously if you're dealt, you know, five clubs, boom, that's easy. But that never happens, you know. You make a flush in the bottom and then you build up. Other than that, it's trying to decide, you know, where you start to build your blocks, knowing the probabilities of getting things. And then the skill after that is really, I think this is the part that you would really like, because I know how much you like stud, is paying attention to the cards that other people have,
yeah,
and what they're looking for. You know, one, so you know when your outs are. I mean, essentially, if you need a five for a full house and one of your opponents gets the last one, you're done. So now you got to readjust and maybe figure out how you build the other cards. So it's all about looking around. I mean, sometimes it can take forever, too. You know, I can imagine some of these bigger level games with royalties. You know, you can't make a mistake. Because once you, I guess I should have said this in the explanation. Once you set a card down, you can't move that around. So, right. You know, once you get your fifth club, you can't go, oh, I'm going to take one from the top and make a... No, you can't do that. So you got to pay attention to where you're going with it and, you know, leave yourself some outs and pay attention. I mean, there certainly is a massive skill separation between someone that is only focused on his boards and not paying attention to other boards if he's playing in a game with people that are.
So you're like, if you had four clubs down for the bottom, well, let's say you had two, let's say you're going for a straight in the bottom instead. You had four with straight at the bottom. You had two clubs in that. And then all of a sudden you pull a club and you put it in the middle and you pull a club. All of a sudden you've got four clubs and other. You can't move them. Wherever you put them, they have to stay, right? You can't.
Yes, exactly.
So it's not if you've set your five card hand, you can't move it. It's no matter what card you put down, wherever you put it, it stays there for good.
It stays there, okay. Right. And that's why initially it takes some time. It takes some time to figure out where you're going to put your initial cards, because again, it's a building block, you know. So if you you know, for example, let's say you have an ace. Well, an ace on the top is usually pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So if you have an ace and you put it on top, the problem is now you're forcing yourself to either get another ace that's better on the middle hand or a pair.
Yeah.
And sometimes that gets difficult, so you might want to, you know, build a little less on the bottom and work your way up. And, you know, again, it's just a matter of figuring out the probabilities of things are going. And that's the problem is the first time is that you're setting your hands initially without seeing anybody else. I mean, I guess there might be some variations where everybody starts with one card and places it. But the way I've been playing, the way I've taught it is that you take your five cards and you place them right away and then
then you draw from that.
And it is that you do start with five cards to start.
It does sound like it takes forever. I mean, if you get five cards, and how many normally in Chinese? 13. So, you're literally waiting for eight single cards to be dealt and placed. If you're playing four-handed, oh, my God, that'll take forever.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And like I said, I mean, you get that card, and you're holding it in your hand, and you're looking around, and you're thinking about where it needs to go. There's such a rush, though, when you make that hand.
Yeah.
You know, you take that chance, you're like, all right. And sometimes you're forced to take a chance. You know, if your opponent makes a hand somewhere, and, I mean, it's possible very early in the hand to know that your opponent's not going to foul. You know, if things just fell his or her way, they're not going to foul. And that puts a lot more pressure on you at that point. So then at that point, if you have royalties, you might, you know, go for broke. You know, hey, he's not going to foul, so we can't tie. So I might as well, you know, shoot for the royalties and really crush them.
Right, because if you follow your hand, you're going to pay whether or not you fouled or lost. So you might as well go for it, right?
That's exactly.
Kind of
right.
A run thing. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Well, now I'm hooked. No, I'm kidding.
But no, definitely, it's definitely a lot of fun. And I mean, you consider I'm playing, and again, the thing about Chinese in general, and particularly this game, is it's also a good solitaire game, you know?
Yeah.
You sit around by yourself while you're waiting and just deal them out and think about where you might put them.
And I did do that with just regular Chinese when I was first learning it. I dealt myself four hands and just kept setting them to see what I could, you know, do. So that's probably how, if I'm going to play open face, I'm probably going to do that, like you said, play as a solitaire for a little while.
Absolutely. All right, well, Turley, we appreciate you calling the hotline, and just remind everybody else to call the hotline at 813-448-1120, and we'll give you something great like a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app. For Apple products with Smapsoft, you don't have to be a winner and enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store, and I know our good friends at Smapsoft are smitten with the open face as much as we are and are presently working on trying to get an open face app out.
Hey, one of my favorite things about having a show like this, and even the magazine and things like that, is seeing some of the cooler names that come our way. And now this one, you could read this name all different ways. It's J-U-S-T-U-S. So it could be Just Us, like Just Us Guys. It could be Justice, like in Justice for All. It could be Justice.
Justice League. Come on, you gotta get started. Justice.
It could be Justice, like that stuff you put on your prime rib. I mean, it could be anything.
It could be. Or the J could be silent. It could just be Justice.
It could be Ustis or Eustace. But I think it's Justice Hayes coming from
Canada.
I'm
gonna go with Justice League Hayes. Yeah.
Justice League.
If not, that's gonna be a great boxer name, wouldn't it be? And in this corner, Justice League Hayes. He's the Superman of the ring.
Justice for all. All right, so this is our mailbag, by the way. Just wanted to get that out there. He wrote in and said, I know that it's been brought up before, but for a Vancouverite socked away in rainy, snowy Canada, the most valuable parts of your podcasts are the hand histories and other hand review features. The news and whatnot are great, but not so relevant to us out-of-country listeners. And even less so when we are working through your archives, when the info is not only out of area but also out of date. Have you ever considered offering a condensed download that contains only the hand histories, etc.? Maybe year by year so the file size isn't too obscene? I would listen to that repeatedly. It would be like poker meditation, the zen of being sucked out on.
He needs to trademark that phrase. you're the master of the podcast.
Here's the deal. You know how hard it is for you to have to go through all the shows and do that. Well, imagine how hard it would be for me to have to go through all those shows, strip out the parts that you like, condense them into one episode or one CD, and then re-release it on another feed. I got a magazine, Poker Cruises website, and a poker tour, and a poker show to help run. So if you want to do that justice, and we'll take 10% of whatever you sell them for. But really, it's a great idea. We have thought about doing like all of our shows, just the shows themselves as volumes or something. But since people can get them for free, and we've always intended it that way, I never wanted to sell them, but I didn't want to put out the price of putting them on CD because it's going to cost us stuff. But to go through each episode and to strip them out, you know. And the other thing too is we don't have like the original Audacity files that we edit in anymore. You know, we keep like about 2 months worth, and then once we know that there's no problems with the show that are posted, we get rid of those and just keep the original MP3 files for our, you know, for our archives and stuff. So for me to go in there and try to do, oh my god, that would literally take months for me to try to even get one decent CD. So I just don't have the time, and really I don't think it's that valuable. I mean, the end of the week's always at the end of the show. If you don't want to listen to the stuff we talked about in 2009, just fast forward to the end of the show.
Well, I don't think that's what he's saying. What he's saying is just be nice when you're... I think he actually edited it down. He's like a painter, I believe. So, you know, when you're up on working on the canvas or wherever he's working, you know, you don't want to stop fast forward. You just want to put on 4 straight hours of us mangling hands of the week and enjoy them without the very witty repartee that we had beforehand.
Maybe he can create an app that will just loop the show in and then fast forward for him to the end of the show. All they gotta do is look for Scott, listen for Scott's voice when he says, "All right." And when it says that, then we know there's a new topic, whether it's the beginning of the show or beginning of the end of the week. So.
Oh man, but no, there's a lot of potential for re-editing the shows, and I'll be honest, I mean, I guess when we started the show, we never thought that it would become as popular as it did, right?
Right.
So, I mean, really what I kind of wish is we went back, we just had, you know, the annotated Antioch PokerCast files, you know, like cross-referencing who was on when and all that kind of stuff. I mean, now, though, you can look back, it's just, it's too daunting to even think about. Even doing what Justice League Hayes here is suggesting, let alone really would be really cool, which is just a complete catalog of where things were.
Yeah, I mean, we're approaching, what, 400 shows?
Yeah.
You know, and that's just 400 shows that are anywhere from 8 minutes to 3 hours long. So, oh, man, it's just, I mean, you got a description, you know, of each one, but that's... certainly not all-encompassing of what we've talked about. Yeah, it's always just basically the main topic, and even that's sort of broad. So, yeah, I would love to do something like that, but there's just no way.
Well, maybe eventually someday we can afford an audio intern that comes in and just has nothing to do but wants to sit in front of the computer and listen to old shows and eat Doritos and jot down notes and splice things and redo it. That would be awesome. That's what we need. We need a you know, like a college slave.
Yeah. You know what, though? I really think that he couldn't do it in an entire semester. It would have to be, like, at least a year-long...
Yeah, like a sabbatical.
Yeah. There's just no way he could do it in one semester. I mean, really, you could literally start at the beginning of the semester to listening to our shows, and a week later you'd still be listening to shows, so... without even stopping. So that's just crazy.
And you'd have to have a very high pain threshold, too, I believe, right? You know, starting from the beginning, listening to those shows, and... I mean, the good thing about those early shows is it doesn't take you very long to get through and annotate and strip things out, right?
But, yeah, the first shows.
But pretty painful elsewhere. So.
Here's my imitation of us on the first show. Hi, I'm Chris Kazemza, and he's Scott Long, and we're doing the Annie Up Poker Show about poker. This is the best our voice will sound for 8 minutes. Thank you. That's basically how we talked. Of course, we had the ding and the microwave in the background and everything, but... yeah, we've come a long way.
All right, Justice League Hayes, we appreciate you sending in the mailbag. Wish we could help you out. Hopefully some of our erstwhile listeners will take it upon themselves and put something together. But in the meantime, we are going to send you a copy of the new ebook, You Called Me With What? by Rick Danford. Which is available for just $1.99 on Amazon.com. Definitely get out there and support our local poker authors and send us your questions for the mailbag at podcast@antiupmagazine.com if you're too cheap to even pay $1.99 and want a free book.
Hey, we got a call to the floor, but you and I are going to handle that.
I think we can handle this one.
You want me to read it?
Sure.
Comes from Ken Young. Situation came in a 2-4 limit hold'em game at a local poker room on an early weekday morning with a regular group as familiar as a home game. The game went heads up after the flop. First to act is a quiet, conservative player who checks to a loud, aggressive player who throws down his bet and tells the other to get out of the hand, aggressively but not angrily. The same happens on the turn and the river with the first to act calling. "I told you to get out, nut flush," says the guy. Dealer calls flush, and the first to act mucks, stating he had flopped a straight and couldn't fold. I looked down and said, "No flush," seeing two clubs, two spades, and a heart. Heated discussion started with one player saying there is a rule that your hand is dead if you misrepresent your hand. The dealer called the floor since she had also called the flush. Floor asked the ghost flush player if he conceded the hand. He did, and the pot was pushed to the first to act. Would the call be different at a less casual game? Is there such a rule on a misrepresented hand?
First of all, I'm going to be invited to this 2-4 limit game with fireworks going on.
Yeah.
Every 2-4 limit game I've ever played in my life is like God's waiting room.
Except our home game.
Well, that's true. But, I mean, there's just never any excitement. You're getting eaten by the rake. And so for fisticuffs to break out in a 2-4 limit like this, it almost makes it worth playing. I think.
Okay.
But no, I mean, his questions are fairly easy here, I think. The call would be different, I guess, in a less casual game, because here's the problem, is the opponent mucked.
Yeah.
Doesn't have a real hand anymore, so it has to go to the only hand that remains, and that is the no flush, which at this point, I don't know what it is, maybe pair, high card, whatever it is, it's better than a hand that's in the muck. But no, as far as I know, there's certainly no rule on misrepresenting hand. It's all cards speak in casinos. You know, you turn your cards over and you could say straight flush, and they'd be like, "No, you don't. You got a pair of eights." "Okay, did I win?" "No." "All right, thank you." But what I did tell Ken is, you know, eventually if somebody's just doing it to be a jerk or does it several times or players feel that there's an angle shooting going on, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that Flora would come over and ask that player to, you know, give him a warning, ask him to stop, or kindly rack their chips and kick them out for the day.
Right. Right. And that's the other thing, too, is it still is on the first player to protect his hand and to know that there's a flush out there or not, you know, and show your hand. Don't just muck it.
Yeah, I think the lesson here is, you know, don't trust anybody in poker. I mean, don't trust anybody in life.
that's
definitely right. Not in poker, right?
That's right.
And the other thing, too, I mean, this is one of my pet peeves at the table, particularly in a 2-4 limit game, but even in a 1-3 no limit or, you know, 4-8 limit or something like that. These going back to Hollywood, that's the other part you have to add to your Hollywood game, is not showing your cards.
Yeah. The slow roll.
It's crazy here. Just turn your gosh darn it Darwin hand over. No one's picking up on reads on you in a 2-4 limit game, you know? "Oh, yeah, I don't want to show you what I raised with. That's privileged information." It's 2-4. It's 1-3 no limit. Just turn your darn cards over, and then you don't have any problem with it. But we got those people that go,
He flopped the straight, though. He flopped the straight and check called the rest of the way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I've seen some 2-4 limit games like that.
Maybe there's some angle shooting going on there, too. He didn't really have a straight. Now he's gotten the pot for lying. You know? Could be. Could have been that he was on a flush draw. No, I guess I wouldn't be on a flush draw, because that would make sense. But really, though, I mean, how do you check call all the way down with a flop straight? That doesn't make sense either.
All right, Ken, we appreciate you sending your call to the floor, and we're going to send you a classic tournament dealer button from tournamentbutton.com, which offers a variety of home dealer buttons with timers built right in them. You can even customize them with your own photo or logo. Ask about the Antiup logo version and use code ANTIUP for free shipping. And remember to send your call to the floor questions to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. If we can't handle it, and we often can't, we'll send it to our good friend Jody Russell, who can.
And if you don't want any swag, just call yourself Mr. No Swag and call the hotline.
Well, you know what's funny about it is eventually after we made that joke, he's like, oh, I called myself that because I never got any swag. And then we awarded him swag and he never claimed it. So
so he truly is Mr. No
Swag.
It's
a game of chicken now with him.
Well, not to confuse anybody, this isn't our hotline segment. This is feedback, Scott's favorite, so here we go.
Hello, boys. Mr. No Swag here. Just wanted to give you a buzz. Was listening to one of the past podcasts, and you mentioned Bill Gates being able to run over any game. I just thought I'd give you a little tidbit of info. I played blackjack with Bill Gates one time in Las Vegas, and I was quite surprised to find that he was at a lower limit table. And I ended up talking to the dealer and the pit boss after he left, and they said he normally plays the $5 table. It's not about the money. It's about the mathematical challenge. So both ways, money doesn't mean much to him, but there you go. Have a good day. Bye.
You know, I like this call for a couple reasons. I mean, one, we just default to Bill Gates when we talk about money just because he's the richest guy in the world, right? But he's definitely not the right person for that. I hadn't necessarily heard this story, but I knew he liked to play, actually likes to play. He's a big bridge player and likes it just for the sport of it. So it certainly doesn't surprise me, this. And then I think the other thing, the takeout on this too, and a lot of discussions with folks about this, is remembering that everybody's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everybody wants to be uber rich and then look like they're uber rich. You know, the second richest man, Warren Buffett, who's friends with Bill Gates, he still drives an old beat up truck, you know, and he could afford a spaceship if he wanted to. So.
I'm taking the shuttle to the store.
You want to be payload specialist today? So yeah, I mean, I guess it is a little bit surprising to hear that someone's playing $5 blackjack. But you know, that's kind of why I respect some of these folks that are rich, because they don't go flaunting their money and feel like they have to play $2,000, $4,000 with Doyle Brunson to be happy.
And I like his explanation, because really, think about it this way. If you're the richest person in the world, you don't need to make more money. There's no thrill to winning $2,000 on a hand of blackjack when you made more than that just standing there playing blackjack.
Right. Yeah.
So to him, it is about the numbers. It is about trying to make 21 and seeing, you know, the trends of the game or whatever it is that he's getting off on. So I just think that $5 blackjack to him, it makes sense, because what's the point of playing $100,000, $200,000 blackjack or whatever, you know? Because it makes no difference to him. So yeah, that makes sense to me that he plays $5.
Excellent. Love the call, Mr. No Swag. Did I get the accent right there?
Yeah, it sounded good.
Hello, boys!
That was pretty good. I thought I was talking to him for a minute there. Hey, you know, the Hard Rock Punta Cana in the Dominican Republic is now accepting bookings for the Annie Up Poker Tour World Championship event, July 28th to August 3rd at the luxurious all-inclusive resort. 14 tournaments with buy-ins as low as 115, with the winner of the $1,100 main event appearing on the cover of Antiup magazine. Great all-inclusive room rates for adults and children will make this a great poker and or family vacation this year. More information at antiupmagazine.com/world championship, including how you can win your way there at Dover Downs and Thunder Valley Casino Resort.
And coming soon, Cypress Bayou in Louisiana. Just got off the phone with the great manager there yesterday, just waiting on gaining approval, and we'll have those details for you pretty soon.
Sweet.
And, of course, don't forget about this great cruise we have coming up that Cupid told you to buy. Wallace Strakowski Jr., Antiup's 2010 Player of the Year and a single table specialist, will be our pro on the May 20th Antiup Poker Cruise out of Miami, which will spotlight sit and goes. Rates are guaranteed only through March 4th, only a couple weeks left. Then we'll also be sailing out of New York City and Tampa this year. Get all the details, including how you can win your way on board at Dover Downs, Seneca, Salamanca, and Naples, Fort Myers, Greyhound Track at AntiupCruises.com.
Here comes our special edition Antiup News Desk.
Yeah, you know, we get on this cruise ship and all of a sudden legislature's going crazy.
It happens like
all over the state, people are talking about poker.
Every time we go cruising, something like that happens.
All right, we'll start, of course, with New Jersey. Governor Chris Christie gave a conditional veto to an online poker bill in the Garden State, saying he'll sign it if changes are made. The bill's sponsor took it as a win, though, and says the governor should have a revised bill in a matter of weeks.
Yeah, see, that's cool. Like I said, I really always thought he would sign it. So it's just that he wants to make sure he signs what's a good bill in his mind, but he still wants it. So he does want it. So this is really a victory, and it's going to happen. So that's great. Big news for poker stars, too, I'm sure. Right? I mean, you don't disagree, do you?
No, absolutely.
Oh, okay. In Pennsylvania, state representative in the Keystone State, Scott's real keen on nickname states here.
Right, well, I ran out eventually, so.
A bill allowing online poker for companies that want to pay a $16.7 million licensing fee.
Yeah, I had a chuckle over this one. I haven't read the whole bill. I just read the initial story that I saw. But that seems to me, just me, to be a mighty hefty licensing fee for what would be interstate poker. Now, if the bill ends up being a compact between all these other states, but at that point you'd have to have all these other states already on it, then I think it might make work sense for $16.7 million, but...
Sure, I mean, Stars is buying a $50 million club just to have their, you know, license, so...
Yeah, but that's a brick-and-mortar casino, you know?
It's giving them a license to do online, which is all they really care about, so... 16, yeah, yeah. Take the 30-something million loss there and just go with the fee.
And I'm going to have to dig a little deeper into this, too. I mean, how do you settle on $16.7 million?
I know.
$16 million. That's not enough. All right. Well, I'll change it to $17 million. Oh, hey! Now let's not get crazy there. All right. How about 16.7? Sounds good. Good. Put that in there.
0.7.
All right. In Washington, a state representative has introduced, and this is Washington State, by the way.
Yes.
Not because we know Washington D.C. Nothing's ever introduced.
They're what, the Apple State? What are they?
they could be the Apple State. the rainy state, the online poker gets you 20 to 40 state. All right, in Washington State, a state representative has introduced a bill to reduce playing online poker in that state from a Class C felony to a Class 3 civil infraction with a maximum fine of $50.
That's awesome. $50. Here, I'll pay the next 6 months worth of fines. Here you go. Here's $300. Get out of my face.
Oh, man. It kind of reminds me of the in Montana. I had never been to Montana, so maybe this is a wives' tale, but you could go speeding down the highway, and they didn't want to have a maximum speed limit there because it's big rural highways, but the federal government insisted on it, so they made a limit, and then they just made it like a $100 fine, and people would just drive down the freeway with $100 bills and just give them to the cops. but they're big on classes here in Washington, aren't they?
Yeah.
Class C felony. Class 3 civil infraction. I wonder what Class 4 civil infraction is. You know, slap on the wrist?
Yeah. It's an tickle. IOU for the Hollywood home game.
And what would be a Class 4 civil infraction? Oh, jaywalker!
Spitting in public. All right, Delaware. The state's lottery division has issued a call for bids for companies wishing to service the state's new online gaming industry with hopes that games will be spread by September 30th.
We'll see whether they can pull it together by then.
Yeah, small state.
Yeah, give it enough time. I should be able to do it.
We'll see.
And then we'll see whether actually anybody beats them to the market on it, too.
Yeah.
The Nevada thing's dragging their feet out there.
Yeah.
All right, and finally, Antiup's Mid-Atlantic Ambassador Michael Young reports that a Maryland state delegate has introduced a bill that would allow residents to play and host home poker games.
Wow.
Boy, the lid is off in Maryland, isn't it?
Yes.
It is approved, adding table games, poker rooms there. Now they're like, no, everywhere! Play them at home, play them in buses, play them wherever.
You hear that, North Carolina? All right, very good.
Hey, excellent.
We get to complete O'Malley's move. We didn't get to do it last week because we were on the ship, so let's refresh our memory from way back when.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we are seated at a $1, $2 PLO game. The max buy-in is $400. It's early in the night, and we are at an action-heavy table. But these players tend to know what they're doing. If you'll remember from previous episodes, this isn't our strongest game. The blinds post, and we're under the gun with the ace of diamonds, ace of clubs, five of diamonds, five of clubs. A very nice starting hand. From under the gun, we pot it to $7. The plus one makes it 24, and the MP one makes it 41. What's going on here? To make matters worse, the button calls. It's back to us, after the blinds fold, and now we're put to our first decision. Do we pot it again? The MP1 and button have almost identical stacks as ours, about 400. But we've got the plus one covered by about two bills. The MP is an aggressive but smart player. He knows the odds, and is better at PLO than we are. We're not going to try to get it all in pre-flop, with such a flop-heavy game as PLO. We call the 41, as does the plus 1. There's already 160 in the pot, and the flop is a beauty. Ace of hearts, queen of clubs, jack of clubs. We've flopped strong, so we're going to play this one strong. We make it 100 to go. The plus 1 folds, but the MP1 makes it 260 on top, which is for our stack. The button folds. What do we do?
You know, I'm pinching myself right now.
Yeah.
Just to be sure. No, no pain. I'm not seeing much mystery here. Am I crazy?
No, I don't think you're crazy. But some people
I'm sure I'm crazy, but not crazy in this moment right here, right?
Right.
To me, Omaha is a game of draws, and we had some monster draws here. Top set with redraws to the ace high flush, a boat, and quads. We're only behind a Broadway, which I am fairly certain we're up against here. But we don't share any of our draws with that. 45 unseen cards, if I did my math correctly, and I almost never do. 17 to prove us now. Potentially three more on the turn, not counting the unlikely straight flush clubs. We could be up against a set of queens or jacks, too, and not have to improve at all.
Yeah.
For me, this is about as easy to call as it comes.
2 weeks ago, I wrote this. One word. Call. I love that you go through all this, you know, explaining and everything, and I appreciate that, because then I don't have to. But really, I mean, you have top set and a billion redraws. So let's just call it a... you know, not a dilemma. It's sort of the, it's not a move. It's the only move. It should be O'Malley's only move this week is what it should be called.
O'Malley's only
move. Because it's a call.
I like that.
Let's hear part two.
Hello again. How many outs do we have? Any ace? That's one. Any queen? That's four. Any jack? That's seven. And any club? That's 16. Add three more if none of these come on the turn, and we've got 19 going to the river. I'm not sure we can fold for that. What could our opponent have? A made straight? King, queen, jack, 10? That's possible. Could it be a set with a made straight? King, queen, queen, 10? That's also likely. I'm pretty sure we're behind here, but I think we're the favorite to take it down by the end of the hand. We call. Our opponent turns over the king of hearts, king of clubs, 10 of clubs, 9 of hearts. Gulp. That takes one of our flush outs away, the 9 of clubs, plus the 2 clubs he's holding, but we're still about a 55% favorite. The turn brings euphoria. The jack of spades. All we have to do is dodge the 9 of clubs, and we do. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, if you know a player is better than you, don't be afraid to flip with them. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, well, you know, I'm not picking on O'Malley here. He works really hard for us for a scale wage. And actually, probably way below scale wage, right? Yeah. But from my experience with players, and I don't know where O'Malley is in his Omaha education here, but I do tend to think that this is a symptom that I see many Hold'em players exhibit when they switch to Omaha. You know, because in Hold'em, you're much less likely to want to get it in when you're behind, knowing you had to catch up. You know, you're on a flush draw or a straight draw or something like that. Yeah. But in Omaha, you have to do that so much more often. And usually, as we found here, we are the favorite when you do. And because you have so many cards in your hand, so many combinations, it's entirely possible a lot of times to be the favorite when you are behind. And if you're just scared or even contemplating some of these types of calls in Omaha, I don't think it's the game for you. I think you need to go back to Hold'em, because you have to be willing to stick it in when you're behind and just understand that you're a favorite, and sometimes you're going to get there and sometimes you aren't. But most of the time you are. Or more times you are than not.
You know, and I, in the past, I was always notorious for being someone who'd like to get it all in on a draw, you know, semi-bluff to try to get you off your hand or whatever. But I am really not a fan of doing that anymore in Hold'em. But in PLO, I am. I mean, and for this exact reason. You have so many combinations, so many things that, and especially in this example, that can go your way. I mean, you have what Scott said, 17, possibly 20 on the turn, 20 outs. You know what I mean? There's no way with top set. And again, the guy has to have exactly King 10 for you to be behind. And he did have King 10,
right,
and he did have what looked to be an open and a straight flush draw. Even, you know, if the ace of clubs came, he had a royal, but. I don't care. I mean, yeah, this is the only game where I'm more comfortable now doing that than I want. I used to be really comfortable doing it and hold them, and I would just live or die by the shove. But not anymore. But in PLO, absolutely.
And what's really interesting about this is these decisions, in my opinion, aren't very hard. The harder ones are, let's say we just had the pocket aces here and no redraws whatsoever. Well, of course, that's a bad example because we would always have boat redraws, but you know, you flop Broadway. Let's say that, yeah, our opponent's hand. And then you get a lot of heat. It's very tough, I think, for people mentally to lay down the nuts. But in Omaha, you have to do it sometimes on the flop.
Yeah.
Depending on how many people we have in there, because maybe you're a dog at that point. So it's the inverse of it. You know, you got to be willing to call without the made hand with a lot of draws, and you got to be willing to fold with the made hand because you know you don't have any redraws and you're probably up against a bunch of people that do have redraws.
Yeah, we played a lot of hole on the ship, and even though it was limit when we played Omaha, I think at least two or three times during the week I folded the straight on the flop knowing that I was going to only win a quarter of the pot if I was lucky and somebody was free rolling for the flush, and of course the flush got there or the boat got there. You know, Faso was sitting on my left, I turned to him like, yeah, I had Broadway there. I let it go, or I had, you know, a straight there and let it go. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah, I had to let it go. And sure enough, I would have lost. So it happens all the time. So you got to be willing to sometimes let it go. I think even I read Danny Duke's book, and she talked about Omaha and how you know, I think it was in the book, but it might have been just something else. But she was talking about how you have to fold straight sometimes, and you really do. You just have to get away from it.
This is Doyle Brunson, and you're listening to Annie Up.
The Annie Up Poker Tour moves north for its next stop, the Annie Up Midwest Championship, April 11th to 21st at Running Aces Harness Park in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area, a part of the country that is absolutely rabid about its tournaments, Chris.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll be up there for the main event. Our great Minnesota ambassador and podcast fan, John Poker Geek MN Somsky, will be there too. And joining us today to tell us much more about this event is Running Aces Tournament Director Tristan Wilberg. Tristan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate being on.
Actually, I always have to ask tournament directors. I mean, we're calling you at 10 a.m. your time. You had to get out of bed extra for us, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Well, we definitely appreciate it. And, you know, your event will be the third Annie Up Poker Tour stop. But the excitement we're hearing from folks up in Minnesota and nearby states about the event really is unprecedented this early for an Annie Up Poker Tour event. What is it about tournaments that gets players in your region so stoked?
Well, there's a lot of good tournament players here in Minnesota, or in the Midwest, that is. These players used to have to travel a lot in order to get to a well-structured, large buy-in event. There were a few local events, but it wasn't until the last 4 or 5 years that there started to be a lot more events that were local. Large tournaments have this allure you can't really find in a cash game, the thought of making it big and, you know, launching your career into a poker pro.
All right, well, let's start with the main event. It's an $1,100 buy-in, and of course the winner will appear on our June cover of Antiup Magazine. You guys have drawn raves from players for your tournament structure. Can you tell us a little bit about it and why players like it so much?
Sure. There weren't really any tournaments that had good structures in this area a few years ago. Our structures were weren't that great when we first opened. Lately, we've kind of taken on a for-the-player approach. We actively listen to what the players want. We made adjustments. We started doing some guarantees, adding money, and lastly, we extended the structures. The structures that we use now are pretty much comparable to any large event you'd find in the nation. We use all the levels you could pretty much think of, 75, 150, 153, 255, some of those levels you're not going to find in most tournaments. And I don't know, all the pros, all the local pros, and all the players in this area just have really been real positive about it since we made those changes.
Excellent, and we should remind folks that they can see those structures at antiupmagazine.com/runningaces. Now, you also have, we've already talked about this a little bit, a unique, I guess I'm calling it a chip buyback program for one of your other multi-day events. Can you tell us what that event is and how it works and whether you've done it in the past?
Yeah, we actually tried a multi-day one event in October of this last year. We did 4 day ones, and it was a 275, and the chip buyback in that one we did 600 because we were just kind of trying it out. And we ended up getting 450 players or so in the event, and there weren't that many chip stack buybacks, so we decided to up it a little bit and see what happens there. So we're going to go to this 5 day one 250, and how this works is that if we wanted to let you play more than 1 day one, and if you do, and you make it to day two on more than 1 day one, then you are going to lose your smallest chip stack, and we'll give you $1,000 for it. So theoretically, if you played all five of the day ones and you made day two every time, you'd get $4,000 before you even play in day two. And we're still going to keep that $50,000 guarantee on the prize pool.
Wow.
Wow, very interesting.
That's pretty crazy. How did you come up with that idea?
They've used it in a few tournaments down south, and it kind of makes sense. It drives the prize pool up a little bit. It gives people a chance to, you know, get a bigger stack, too. If they make it to day two and they don't have a huge stack, it gives them a little incentive to try to come in and play a little more aggressive, get a bigger stack.
Wow.
Now, you said your first one, you didn't have as many chip buybacks, but subsequent ones you have, is this something that you're seeing a good number of players buying in multiple times?
Yeah, we did have quite a few buy-in multiple times, but not all that many made it. But we'll figure there'll be a little more incentive this time. And a lot of people, the concept was pretty new the last tournament we ran, so a lot of people didn't quite get it. But after they saw the results in October, they really wanted us to do another one. So that's how we threw one in there.
Well, you know, another cool thing is you don't see a free roll on the schedule of a major tournament series that often. Can you fill us in on the details of that and what prompted you to add it to the schedule?
Sure. We actually have a lot of free rolls at Running Aces. Every Monday we do a $2,000 added free roll. And then there's a few times a year that we do a big free roll where we add $5,000 or $10,000. What I found is having that free roll at our normal time on a Monday, when you have it prior to a big tournament and you award some main event seeds, it really draws the players, and I guess it makes sense because, you know, not everybody has the bankroll to play an 1100 or even a 250 qualifier. So having a free roll like this gives everybody a shot at the big payday. And even if you do have the bankroll, why wouldn't you want a free seed?
Absolutely. All right, well, your schedule is packed with several other no-limit events, and again, I'll remind our listeners again that all events in this series, not just the main event, count towards Antiup's Player of the Year race this year. But the schedule also features a Limit Omaha 8 event and a no-limit Omaha High event. Tell us a little bit about the Omaha market up in Minneapolis.
Sure. We have a game or two running about 4 or 5 days a week at Aces. Usually it's a limit 08 game or a 2-100 spread Omaha High. We run a spread limit Omaha tournament once a month. It's on the last Wednesday. And those Omaha High players have been pushing me to have a high-only tournament at some point, so I figured this would be a great time to add that one in.
You're also... go ahead, Scott. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to follow up. And why no limit versus pot limit?
Well, to be honest, there's not a lot of dealers that deal pot limit in this area, so it's just a little easier.
Well, it's definitely easier on the players as well, too. So, yeah, I was just curious.
I have to say I agree with that. Nothing kills the mood and momentum of a poker game like, how much is in the pot? And then adding it up. It just bet what you want. I love that. So,
right.
You know, you're running a number of satellites throughout the event, which is always awesome, both for vouchers and main event seats. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, what's involved and how popular they are?
Yeah, we have two $125 regular qualifiers on the schedule for the $500 event and one $120 turbo for that one. And we also have five regular $250 qualifiers and two turbos for the main event, the 1100. And then we put in some four $65 super satellites. The nice thing about the $65 supers is that players can use that $250 voucher to get into a $250 A1 event, or they could use it for a qualifier for the main event because it's also $250. Or they could just use it as money off the main event if they want. And we've kind of had more success with running super satellites than getting constant sit-and-goes, but we'll certainly offer those as well.
Excellent. All right. Well, obviously, we hope all the players last very long in the tournaments, but we also know 90% of them get knocked out. So when they get knocked out, what kind of cash games are they going to be looking to play at Running Aces?
In Minnesota, we don't have no limit. They won't let us, except for in tournament play. So our most popular game is a 2-100 spread, and it is basically the Minnesota version of 1-2 no limit. $50 min buy, 300 max, 1-2 blinds, and you can bet or raise anywhere between 2 and 100 at any time. We also run 3-6 kill and 2-4 pretty regularly, and Omaha and stud several days a week. Our bigger players like to play 5-100. It has a $300 minimum buy with no max. Blinds are 2-5, and the betting's in $5 increments, and it's anywhere between 5 and 100. The game usually runs big. Some of our regular players consider it the best cash game in Minnesota.
Are there any indications that the legislature may be changing that at all? Do you see that down the road, or is it just always going to stay this way, you think?
Not that I've seen. They take the stance that they're protecting people from spending too much.
We've heard that out of the place.
Gee, where have I heard that before?
Yeah, I was curious more about the 500 game. You said it plays pretty big. Do you see a lot of raising and re-raising in that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, there's some big stacks on there. There's people constantly putting their pictures of their stack on Twitter, winning $100. I don't know, talking about how they make $100 and $200 an hour playing that game. I don't know.
Man. Well, now, your casino also offers a variety of table games. Is that correct?
Yep. We have Fortune Pie Gal, Easy Bock, Mississippi Stud, 3-4 Card Poker, and Ultimate Texas Hold'em. And, of course, Blackjack. All of our games are ante-free, and there's other casinos where they charge that ante. We do not in our carnival games. We also offer progressive jackpots and various side bets. And we also have simulcast horse betting and electronic pull tabs now. That just got added. So.
Cool.
Excellent. All right, well, I love to eat, so tell me a little bit about the Winner's Circle restaurant, which looks like it's fantastic, and including a couple buffets at night, which I live on when I travel. What more can you tell us about it?
Our Winner's Circle has some fantastic options, really. It's got the seafood buffet, which has pretty much anything you can imagine. You get 1 pound of crab legs, and then there's Chef Carve prime rib. That's on Thursdays. Friday, we have the all-you-can-eat fish fry, and Saturday, we have the all-you-can-eat prime rib and barbecue ribs option. Definitely won't leave there hungry, Scott.
I'll see you on Saturday. That was prime rib.
I was going to say that Running Aces doesn't have a hotel, but you guys have worked out discount deals for players at three nearby locations. We have links to those on our antiupmagazine.com/runningaces page. How can players get those discounts?
All you have to do is call them up and let them know that you're coming for the Antiup Poker Tournament, and they'll give you the discount.
Cool.
It's the American Inn and Country Inn and Suites in Forest Lake, which is about 2 miles up the road, or the Hampton Inn and Suites in Lino, which is about 5 miles.
Excellent.
Very close. Mm-hmm. Not so close is Thunder Valley Casino Resort out in Sacramento, California, which was the host for our first tour stop. But they're now running satellites for all future Antiup Poker Tour stops, including the Running Aces event. More information on those can be found at antiupmagazine.com/runningaces. But I'm curious, what do you think it means to have fellow Antiup Poker Tour properties supporting each other?
Well, I think it's pretty cool. Antiup has a great presence around the country, so it's wonderful to see these other properties pulling together. And by creating this partnership, it allows us to get more advertising, which will in turn help us grow the event. And I think it'll reward the players by creating packages and opportunities they wouldn't normally have. I think the support will be great for the tour.
Yeah, I have to agree. It's so nice to know that they're, you know, that people are excited about it and then helping each other out and just making it a success for everyone.
Right.
You know, the Antiup Standee, which is a big plastic sign of our magazine cover with the head cut out so players can snap a photo of them on the cover. It's already set up at Running Aces. Are your players enjoying it?
They sure are. They're sticking their heads in and having their friends snap pictures and talking about how they're warming up for the real cover shot.
I got to let everybody know a little Easter egg here. That's Scott's body, so they must not feel too good how they look when they put their head through that hole, though. Oh,
that's funny.
Oh, but it was some years ago when I was a slender.
Yeah, you were svelte. Yeah. You were svelte
yes.
back then.
No, I noticed it made me really big on there, too, so everybody's head looks really small. Thanks, appreciate that.
I didn't notice
that.
but
no, I'm really glad to hear that people are enjoying it. It's a fun little thing, that's really cool. Looking forward to seeing some photos that are coming out. I've seen a couple already, so.
Right.
But obviously, the real cover shot is the winner of the main event getting on there June. So what's the buzz up there about that for players? Is that an exciting thing for them?
Yeah, I think every player secretly dreams about being on the cover of a national publication like Antiup. I mean, who wouldn't? Some of the players aren't even that secretive about it. They talk how they're going to make it to the cover, and it's going to kickstart their career, and they'll be the next Phil Ivey.
Awesome.
You know? Everybody dreams about making it.
Well, awesome, Tristan. We thank you very much for joining us today. Definitely looking forward to getting up and seeing you in April for the event. I just want to remind our folks, more information on the event at antiupmagazine.com/runningaces or straight at runningacesharness.com. And then, of course, for more information on the Antiup Poker Tour in general, visit antiuppokertour.com. Thanks a lot, Tristan. Anything else about the event you want to tell us?
Well, that's it. It should be a good event. I can't wait for April to get here. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Tristan.
This is Joe Navarro, and you're listening to the best poker cast in all the universe, Antiup, the absolute best on poker.
All right, we're going to New Jersey for our hand of the week this week, Chris.
Oh, cool. Something tells me I'm going to need a pen and paper for this one.
Maybe. And you notice I was going to not say all right at the top, but
yeah,
now that
you did,
set that trigger up, so I have to now.
Don't worry, you always would anyway.
All right, it comes from our new friend Caro from New Jersey, and he wants to say, first of all, Chris, this hand takes place at the end of a winning session.
Okay.
So he probably ran his stack up, it doesn't matter. Okay. But he says, I believe most of your hands of the week take place at the end of winning sessions because these are the hands that are seared in our minds. Like a good steak. Now I'm hungry. He says, when you double your buy-in from 200 to 400, that's great. When you lose your buy-in of 200, it's tough. But when you get that buy-in up to 800, 1200, then double up, that is epic. And that loss just leaves us crushed.
Okay.
When your listeners send on a hand that makes such an impact on them, I feel they're compelled to share with you and all their fellow listeners. It is no surprise that the hand is one that takes place after a normal buy-in has been built up to size that is truly memorable.
I'm sorry.
That one is his memorable hand.
I'm sorry. Is this hand of the week or Carl's memoirs? are we doing hand of the week, or is this guy telling me his life story?
I think this is a pretty good explanation. I think.
Good God, just tell me the hands.
No, you know, what's funny is on the forum at antiupmagazine.com/forum, shameless plug,
somebody went back and dug up. You remember the show we had Paul Wasika on?
Yeah.
I barely even remember Paul Wasika now, let alone that he was on the show. That's how long ago it was. And now they started up this discussion about, is online poker rigged again?
Yeah.
Wow, really? Again? And again, a lot of it is just all the stuff that we talked about before. You see, like, a ton more hands, so this stuff happens more often. But again, it's just like, you know, I never win with aces. Well, that's not true. You win with aces the same amount as everyone else, unless you're a lousy player. It's just you remember when you lose with them, and I think that's what our good friend Carl is trying to remind everyone, is that when you've had a really good session and you blow it with one hand, that's the hand you're always going
to
remember.
How can we expect Justice to enjoy the hand of the week when all we're doing is talking about stuff that's not the hand of the week? He's fast-forwarding feverishly through the show to get to this point, and he's still listening to us babble about stuff that has nothing to do with analysis. Guys are killing me.
All right, let's move on to the hand.
Sorry, Justice. Spoils. No Justice today.
Pause to kill Cassandra. All right, Carl's at the Borgata. It's a 2-5 no-limit hold'em game. He had 300.
How much? You dropped out there. How much did he have?
He bought in for 300 and built it up to 1,200 after 5 hours of Sterling play.
Okay.
Sterling was my adjective
there. All right.
Give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Yeah. He says, my usual quote-unquote move has been the reliable raise to $20 pre-flop, get five callers, bet $100 on the flop, and take it down. He said, this has been working great, only having to throw it away to check raise a few times, hitting the flop once and doubling my stack against an aggressive player who picked the wrong moment to play back at me. In this hand, I am in the big blind with the under the gun, three other players, the button, small blind, all limping in. I look down for the ace of hearts, ace of diamonds.
Okay, so it's limp to us and we have aces.
Four, five, six callers, and we're in the big blind with aces.
So before he said he would raise to 20 and get five callers... Mm-hmm. So, I'm assuming now that we have limpers, you might want to raise that a little more. So, let's make it 30. We're going to be out of position the rest of the way.
And 30, really?
30, well, let's see. They limp for 5. So, there's already 20, 30 out there. So, pot-sized bet's not too bad. Maybe 40.
Yeah, I might overbet the pot here. Here's the thing. If we get so many, if a $20 raise pre-flop, which is 4x, I mean, I guess... Yeah, he's getting five callers, which you don't want, generally. I think it's going to be bigger. And then we have all these other limpers. So if he normally was going to do a 20, I would almost use our tournament scale here and add another 5 in for everybody. So at least 40, I'm raising. Probably 50 or 60 even here. Yeah. And I'm probably still going to get action on it, which I want. You know, I want at least one caller. Well, I should just say one caller. I'd rather not have more than one caller. But I certainly don't want 6 here. And 20 or 30, I mean, at this point, I don't think anybody's going to fold for a $30 bet. And then now I'm just throwing my money away, aren't I?
What's so weird
is... against 5 opponents?
If you got 5 guys or 6 guys limping...
6, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and what's weird is if they're going to call a $40 a raise, why wouldn't they have just raised themselves to 30 and take control of the hand? It's just so weird to think that there's going to be 4 or 5 people coming along for a $40 raise, which is what I was suggesting, 30 or 40. Uh-huh. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't say it's a bad move to make it 60. It's just weird to go from $5 to 60 just because you got some limpers. But you're pretty much playing your hand wide open then.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, too, is I've built this thing up to 1,200. I've played for 5 hours. I'm probably cognizant that I might be in the middle of a hand of the week here. Or I'm going to lose my stack. And really, we got 6, so that's $30 that's in there right now. You know, I'd be happy just taking $30 again off of this and not have to play aces out of position.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too. Remember, you're out of position, so you want to make it a little more than you would if you were just looking for action, so in position. So, I don't know. I mean, I don't fault 60, but...
I actually see a lot of those $60 bets in 1-2 no-limit games where the normal bet's $6. And they get called, so I don't think it's out of line.
All right. Well, I'll stick with 40. You go at 60, and I'll meet you at the finish line.
All right. Well, it sounds like you're in the middle here because our hero raises to his customary 20.
Oh, that's not good.
Hey, you find something that works for you, right?
Yeah, but, I mean, it works for you when you're the first one to raise and get callers behind. This is different.
Right, he immediately says, I now think this might have been a mistake with so many limpers and being out of position.
Yeah.
But he said at the time, though, I believe in making the same raise each time to not tip your hand. I mean, this is a good concept because I in theory, believe this. You know, hey, if you're doing the same raise all the time, then people can't put you on a hand. Where it falls apart, though, is you're not in the same situation every time. I think people worried about their cards tipping their hand. But I think it is, you can have different raises for different positions, you know, under the gun, on the button, and the blinds. As long as your raises aren't tied to the cards you have, I don't think you tip your hand. You're not tipping your hand. I think you're... I mean, it depends on how observant people are, but right. To me, that's a bigger thing.
I remember it was Chris Ferguson in that Full Tilt book. He talked about early position, he doesn't raise as much. Later position, he raises more. So, and that's not tipping his hand. It's just something he does that consistently. So that's all that matters. It's not the strength of your hand. It's the position you're in. So, we disagree on the amount that we would raise, but we agree that 20 is not good.
Yeah, and get this. He says, I now think I should have raised to 45 to 55.
Right, right between us. Yeah, that's probably about right.
So why don't we say 50 and everybody's happy?
Yeah, we'll say 50 and everybody's happy.
Unfortunately, you only raised to 20. You can't take it back because it's not the Chris Hollywood home game.
That's right.
The under the gun player, two other players, and the button call. So one, two, three. I don't know what we just said. Four. Four callers.
God. Well, that makes sense because it's only 20.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually surprised that the other two folded. I don't know what they had. But. The flop comes Queen of Hearts, Seven of Hearts, Trey of Spades. And we are first to act, as it sounds like the small blind was one of the casualties of our massive $20 raise.
Yeah, we're going to lose to a set here. You watch. I don't even have to think about it. It's just no way. You know,
it is an audio show, so I don't know if I have to watch it.
Okay, just listen.
You listen.
Listen to yourself read it. It's going to be a set we're losing to. You watch. You listen. You see. okay, so we're first. Oh, I don't know, did the small blind call, but we're probably first.
Say, small blind was a victim of our race.
Oh, okay. All right, so we're first act. All right, well, there's, a 100 in the middle, and his standard thing was bet 100, so let's bet 100. That's what he was doing.
We're going to be consistent. Let's keep it going, right?
Bet 100.
And that's exactly what our hero did. He's after his customary $100. Under the gun calls, two players fold, and the button calls. So we got rid of two more. Three-handed and no one played back at us yet.
Okay, so there's 300 more in the pot. So now there's 400 in the pot about. And we got to hope that... We think the end of the gun might be pretty strong. The button could be floating if he doesn't believe these guys both check to him. He might just throw in a big old bet in the end and take it. So got to be cognizant of that. Okay, so 400 in the middle. We're going to the turn.
Yeah. Now he says the end of the gun player started the hand with a little over $900. The button had around $500. He says these players have seen me do this all night and probably don't put me on much. Yeah. I think I'm good here. I'm worried about a flush draw. I'm pretty sure I'm probably up against a big queen. I don't want to see another big card or a heart. Yeah, I definitely don't want to see a heart. I could see a flush draw being very possible. I what do you think about a big queen? I think a big queen would play back at him here.
Maybe. I mean, especially if we knew that he'd been doing this all night long, a check raise, well, I can't check raise, but a raise would have been forthcoming, I think. Especially if the under the gun, like just calling the button, actually had the big queen. If the button had the big queen, you would think he'd raise there now to protect this big queen.
Yeah, unless they both want to float here and think, you know, hey, this guy's going to... I mean, I don't know what happened. The problem is we don't know what he does on the turn. Doesn't sound like he makes a turn very often. Raises $20 pre-flop, gets $5, bets $100, takes the flop down. So he may not ever get to the turn.
Right, that's what I'm saying. The button isn't floating if he has a big queen. He has a hand that he's calling with. So if he's floating, then that's whatever. But if one of them had a big queen, I think they would have raised here at some point just because they want to protect it against the two hearts. So we might be ahead, or we could have massively behind and need to hit an ace.
Yeah, probably way ahead, way behind that... That good old cliche, right?
Yeah, Lee Child's remark. If we're going to have a heart come, let's have it come now so we can have a chance to hit it again on the river for a flush.
Exactly. All right, the turn is the eight of clubs. So our board now is queen of hearts, seven of hearts, tray of spades, eight of clubs, And again, we are first to act with a pot of 400-ish.
Well, he believes he's ahead. So if he believes he's ahead, then there's no reason not to put the hammer down. If he thinks that he could be behind, he might want to check for pot control. I know I realize that the flush could get there for free now or whatever, but if you believe that you're ahead, you got to bet. I'd bet like 250 if I believe I'm ahead.
Right.
So if he believes that, then bet 250.
A couple things I don't like about this. I never like being out of position with aces. I don't like to have aces against multiple opponents. And I also don't like to have aces when I bet and I just get called on the flop.
Yeah.
I really don't know where I am. He seems to think he might be ahead. He might be ahead, but there's so many things that could not be ahead that we could be behind on. At this point, I think I took my best shot at this pot. I know it's a little chicken crap of me, but I think I'm going to check here and see if I can get the showdown cheaply. And if I get a huge bet, then you know what? That'll teach me to bet $20 from aces.
Well, the thing about the check is that it plays right into the aggressive, one of these aggressive players floating you and just stealing
it. It does, yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like I've played really well up till now, and I knew I was going to be out of position, and they must know that I know that. So for me to fire again tells them I have a decent, yeah, well, it's a different level here. It's not.
It is, absolutely.
So, yep. I mean, if they know that I know that, and I'm still betting, they must think that I have a hand. They must know I have a hand. So when I fire now I'm going to get my answer, I think. If I fire 250, 300 here, I'm going to get my answer. If somebody calls again, I don't know if they're really willing to risk what appears to be $400 or so of their roll, their
right.
stack, on a flush draw. So if they call again, then I might, on the river, slow down. But at this point, if somebody's got a set, they're going to come alive, I think.
Yeah,
and I really
do want
to save that 250, but I'm not playing the save 250. I'm playing to win.
That's true. I mean, really, at this point, we're only really truly scared about the under the gun player because the button only has 500.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if we take your line and bet 250 and he raises us all in, it's a min raise, you know. We'll take a shot. We can't be. There's nothing on this board that we can't catch up to, right? There's no straight right now.
Yeah, no, right now, exactly. We could always hit the board two aces and win
that. Oh, yeah, we can hit. Yeah, so we can still have outs if we're up against a set.
Right.
And if we're not up against a set, we got more outs, so. All right. You convinced me.
All right, don't fold. Don't check.
All right,
fold.
Well, our hero takes a moment and leaves out for 400.
Wow,
go big or go home.
That's the pot. I don't think you need to bet that much to get your point across. But maybe you do. I don't know. But I think that you'd get the same result betting a lot less than that.
Yeah, because now the problem is if the under gun shoves for 900, are you really going to put another 500 in this pot?
Yeah.
Knowing that you probably only have two outs at this point?
Yeah.
Maybe a few more depending on what he has. Again, the under gun player is who I'm scared about. I mean, 400 at this point, if he folds and then the button moves all in for 500, yeah, sure, for 100 more. But yeah, you're right. It seems like too much for what we're up against.
Yeah, that's a lot.
All right, the under the gun thinks for a while and makes the call, looking quite frustrated. I'm feeling much better now, I think.
Hmm.
Button folds, also looking a bit like he didn't want to lay it down. I still think I'm good here. At this point, I'm thinking he might be.
Oh.
Only really worried about a small set, or he might hit a flush draw. Actually, hit the flush, but it's flush draw now. I'd be happy if he just hit the flush draw on the river. He's been playing loose and a massive stack, hitting a straight draw earlier. So that's what I put him on. So I'm thinking, no heart. Now, here's the thing. Frustrating doesn't necessarily mean I didn't want to call. Sometimes it's, should I be raising here? Is this now the time that I pounce? But given all that, I think the read might be a little bit pretty accurate.
I just feel like, in the back of my mind, if I were playing this hand, that this under-the-gun player could be thinking, you know what, if I could merely call here if I have a set. Because I really think if the under the gun had a flush draw, he's not calling 400 for a flush draw. So I don't have to worry about raising to protect my hand here. And I can just smooth call flat call for all you future shows when they come up with the terminology for us.
Or just simply call.
Yeah. I wonder if the Under the Gun has a set and is thinking the under the button would fold to this bet if you had a flush draw, and you can afford to, and you're hoping now that the big blind, our hero here, has aces, and you're just smooth calling. So
could also be a set of sevens and worry that we have the queens.
Yeah, and that's true, but, you know, a set of sevens, yeah, either way, I think that it could be that you don't have to worry about fading a heart here. It could just be that we're way behind.
Right.
You know, or it's ace-queen, which I don't know if he's going to call ace-queen $400, but I don't think he's on a flush draw. I really don't. And I know a heart's probably coming, and he's going to represent it because he can't win. I don't know, but... I hate Hand of the Week. It's me agita. We should get, like, an antacid company to sponsor it.
Oh, excuse me. All right, the river is the... Wait for it.
Jeez.
Deuce of hearts. So our final board is queen of hearts, seven of hearts, tray of spades, eight of clubs, deuce of hearts. So the flush does get there. Really nothing else other than a set of deuces, which is crazily likely. Not the card we want to see. Although you just talked yourself out of being on the flush draw. So at this point, we still have to figure out whether we're way ahead or way behind.
Well, if we check... And this guy's ahead of us. I don't think he wants to shove. I think he wants to get what he can out of us. And, I mean, I realize there's 1,000. Let's see. He has, like, a ton of the money in the pot. So, whatever he bets really is... Because he only started with 900, right?
Yeah.
So, whatever he bets is going to be a reasonable bet if it's whole stack. So, I don't know.
Yeah, about 400 or so left.
Yeah, he's got... Yeah, so that would make sense because he called 400 on a turn. So, I don't know. I mean, I think I might just check call. I mean, I wouldn't fold. I can't fold now, I don't think, because I believe that he didn't have a flush draw. So I think I have to just suck
it up. Here's the problem, though, with him. If he didn't have a flush draw, what does he have that we can beat?
No, I know.
Just a queen?
I know.
Anything else that he would be doing that has his beat. I mean, even the lowest two pair, deuce and tray, has his beat here.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's unlikely, I think. But... I think you're right. I just can't see him putting this much money in with ace-queen.
Yeah.
So at this point, I think we actually need to improve. It's not so much the hearts. I think we need to improve, if that's what we thought.
Yeah, he was thinking no heart. So if his feeling was that this guy had a heart draw, I just got this... I think the suspicion is we're beat no matter what. I know I want to check call because I'm just dying to see the hand. But if he doesn't have the flush draw... then he had a hand that beats us. If he had a flush draw, it got there. Then what other hand could be playing?
Exactly. That's exactly, I think, the thought process you need to have. Yeah. It's illogical right now to think that this guy has anything that we can beat.
Well, I guess I check and decide how much he bets. If he shoves, then I got to really think about it. But he might bet 100 or 200, and it might be worth the call, the odds and whatever.
Sure,
maybe he did go crazy with ace-queen or something. I don't know, but... like I said, if the guy had a set, we're beat. If he had a flush draw, we're beat. So we're beat. If it wasn't a heart, I'm shoving. It's a heart. I just, in my heart, in my gut, it feels like this guy didn't have a flush draw and that he had his beat.
Yeah.
But because our hero says, you know, that he thinks that it's a heart draw. Just to me, to call 400 for a heart draw just makes no sense. So.
All right, so here's the thing. If we thought that he wasn't on the flush draw, which is what you were saying, right?
Right.
And he had something, at best for us, ace-queen, but at worst, a two-pair or something like that. The only way we're going to win here now is to shove and make him think that we were playing our own heart draw aggressively, which doesn't really make sense. Oof. You know what I mean? In other words... can we use this heart? If he doesn't have hearts, can we use his heart to our advantage?
Yeah, I know. But I just don't... In my mind, when he called the 400, he's not on a heart draw, so maybe. Of course, I don't know if I couldn't...
See, that's what I'm saying. We have two different hands of the week going here. We got yours, which I think is awesome. I mean, you've decided that he's not on a heart draw. So the heart's got here, so at this point, and you've decided that we're beat, right? So the only way we're going to win is to bet. Checking and hoping that it's $100 or something doesn't seem logical to me. If we think we're beat, we need to do what we can to get them off the hand. And then we have the real hand of the week, where our hero is convinced that he's on a hard draw and got there.
Well, let me ask you this.
In which case, I think you have to check fold.
In my mind...
Or check a call if it's a little small. Just in case you're wrong.
Your suggestion, in my mind, doesn't work if this player is a very confident player. And because would somebody on a flush draw, after betting 100 on that flop, now bet 400 on the turn on a flush draw? I don't think so. I think that
no,
that doesn't
that's what I'm saying. Our story doesn't add up. But.
Right, so I don't think we can win by shoving, making this guy think that we have hearts now. I don't think he's going
to
believe
we have
hearts.
But we'd have to hope that our player is not as savvy as we think he might be.
That's what I mean. If the guy's a savvy player, it isn't going to work. That's why I said it So I'm if he's a savvy player, I can't shove. If he's like a goofball, maybe I can get away with it. I don't know. He has to recognize that there is a flush on the board and not have one himself. So
that's you know what's interesting about this hand at this point is if we lose this hand, we are even for the day.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, it kind of sucks because we you don't want to give away $900.
No, you won't be able to sleep.
Yay, at least I'm even.
You won't sleep for a week.
But it does help a little bit knowing that you're not going to go home a loser unless you stick around.
Okay, the call, when he called that 400, I'm done with his hand. I'm checking, and then if he bets like 100 or something just to try to milk it or make it, whatever, I call it just because I'm still up a bunch, and he could just have, possibly could have a bluff or ace queen or something, who knows. But I can't shove here. I just can't shove because any reasonable hand's going to call me. And if he's somehow was calling 400 for the flush, then you know, then more power to him. But I'm checking, and if he shoves, I'm folding. I only have aces.
Yep. Okay. So we think for a few moments and check, hoping to get the showdown cheaply. Our hero instantly goes all in for his last 400 or so. Of course. Our hero, I really think he has a flush or possibly a set. I am still up for the game, and I feel it's worth saving the last bet and fold, tabling my aces.
That's it? We don't get to know the hand?
I'm getting there. He ended up doing what you said, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's what I would probably have done.
Our hero jumps up and shows his ace of spades, queen of diamonds. Hero says, my heart sinks, and I've been reliving this hand of my nightmares ever since. Yes. It has grown to mythic proportions in my mind.
That's brutal.
Part that kills me is I made a mistake, didn't get unlucky, I just screwed up. That would have been a $1,500 pot. Should I have pushed all in on the river? I did have the ace of hearts, which I forgot about that. We did have the ace of hearts. When you really call it a smaller flush draw, I was a little certain they might have had a set. That actually makes that point that I made about it may not make sense for us to have the flush draw, but at the same time, our opponent knows he doesn't have the nuts.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Wow. Yeah, how do you call 400 on the turn with just ace-queen there?
Ace-queen. Well, it explains why he was frustrated about it.
Yeah, I guess. Wow, 400. Yeah, I forgot about the ace of hearts in our hand. But that makes more sense in PLO than it does in Hold'em.
It does,
because the $400 bet still doesn't make sense if you had the flush. I mean, flush draw. So, oh man, brutal hand, Carl. Sorry about that.
Ouch. All right. Well, you didn't win the $1,500 pot, Carl. But we have something much, much better for you: a deck of J Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Antiup. You can pick up your own decks in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com.
Plus, he gets the immortality of being on the show. That's priceless.
That's true.
Priceless.
Can't beat that.
Hey, I want to thank Tristan of Running Aces for being on the show this week. Really looking forward to the Antiup Poker Tour stop there. It's going to be huge. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the tables.
Antiup is a production of AntiupMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. contact us at podcast@anyupmagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@anyupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.